Jim. It's the World of Bonds. It's Monday, the 11th of October, 2021. This is for professional investors only and never ever investment advice. Sell-off in government bond yields continued towards the end of the week. 30-year gilt yields in the UK were up 7 basis points on the day, now yield about 1.5%, which is the highest since the middle of 2019. Outflows have started, and I guess the capital losses that people are seeing in some of those bond funds and bonds that they own are causing people to reassess whether they want to own them. So in US investment grade, there was $2.5 billion out last week, and $2 billion out of one of the big US Treasury bond ETFs in the United States. So that does change things only a little bit, because I think US investment grade had about 8 weeks in a row of significant inflows, but certainly the recent price movement is causing a bit of a reassessment of that. Elsewhere, still talk about 3rd of December and what that means for US default. We have seen a slight movement in the price of US Treasury bills maturing on the 9th of December, and that kind of tells you that there is a little bit of nervousness that we're just going to go through this circus again as we get towards the end of November, and worries about a kind of elective default, selective default on the US debt will happen then. So still a tail possibility, but one that would have significant impacts for the global economy. Now, Friday's big number that everyone waits for every month, the most important number for global markets, is non-farm payroll. This is job creation for September in the United States. And on the face of it, it was an extremely disappointing headline. So just 194,000 new jobs created in the United States in non-farm sectors. Remember, they strip out farm jobs because of their extreme seasonality. August jobs number was revised higher, but you know, you could still argue was still quite low at 366,000 jobs. So a couple of months and a kind of run of marginally disappointing or very disappointing for September headline job numbers. So you might think that people thought that this would be a recessionary signal, but really the narrative that's built up around this weak run of job numbers is that companies, it's not that there are no jobs available, it's that companies are unable to fill the vacancies that they have. And they look to this by, you know, breaking down the numbers, and you can see that there were increases in the average work week. So people are working longer hours, a sign that, you know, there is demand for their labour, and earnings rose by more than expected over the month as well. So some good news out of the numbers to balance the bad headline. And it does add to this inflationary narrative that we're going to end up with wage inflation, and that will turn into a spiral, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. The other thing that gave people a bit of solace is that in the past 16 months, so a year and a half nearly, 13 out of those 16 months, the jobs reports have been revised up in future. So we know that there are some difficulties around seasonal adjustments and estimates around a very unusual economy around COVID. So it may not be as bad as the headline number looked. And that's what the markets took away from it. That led to that late sell-off in government bonds and a wobble in risk assets. Elsewhere in the numbers, we saw that the participation rate fell. So 183,000 people in America left the labour force completely. And that's a bit of a puzzle, really. You know, if the economy is so strong and demand for labour is so strong, why are people stopping looking for work? Why are they saying that they're not interested in finding a job anymore? And the arguments put forward, and you can take it or leave it, are that people are worried about Delta, if they're margin, you know, if they're have an underlying health condition. The rise of Delta has left some people wanting to stay at home rather than look for a job. Perhaps the other, perhaps more plausible one, is that COVID has led people to reassess their life priorities, and people are leaving the workforce to take early retirement or do charity work or something unpaid and more interesting to them. So that's perhaps another factor. We don't really know the answer for that either. But the Dallas Fed say that now that all the COVID-19 labour market slack has disappeared. And that kind of opens the door, in markets' minds anyway, that the November taper is still very much on the table. So we could be a month away from the Fed taper. The unemployment rate's going in the right direction. And when you look at the jobs numbers, private sector job creation is doing better than public sector. So, you know, that's kind of the balance that you normally would like to see as an indicator that the economy is going well. So what does this all mean for wages? As I say, wages, the earnings growth was a little bit higher than people had expected. I think it was downgraded for the previous month, so I think it was a wash overall. But nevertheless, there was a rise. Wages are robust in the United States. And so, as I say, that's something that the Fed will be happy with. Will that feed through into general inflation? Is there a risk of this wage price spiral that we all remember or think we remember from the 70s? And so I saw a good tweet. Unfortunately, I can't remember who it was by, so apologies for lack of accreditation. But looking at the elasticity of core PCE, which is the measure of inflation that the Federal Reserve looks at compared to unit labour costs, i.e. wages, effectively. And so if we go back to that 1970s stagflationary era that everyone is scared of, the elasticity of core inflation to wages was about 0.6%. So as one went up, the other went up. That's been consistently falling, and for a number of reasons. Globalization is one of them. You know, if you're an American steel worker, you're no longer just working, comparing yourself to other steel workers in America. You're comparing them to those in Korea or China or Japan. And so as the world opened up, then that elasticity, you know, a company could move to a different country rather than hike your wages. There's also a complete fall in trade union membership, obviously probably related to that globalization as well, but to other factors too. So by the turn of the millennium to the year 2000, that elasticity had fallen from 0.6 to 0.3. A decade on, 2010, 0.1, so virtually no relationship between the two. And today, as we go into the COVID recovery, it's at 0.05 elasticity. So effectively, the relationship between core inflation and wages no longer exists to anything like the extent that it did back in the 70s and 80s. And that's something to bear in mind. Either if you see inflation go up or if you see wages go up, there may no longer be a good relationship between the two. Two things to finish up on. One, Chinese high yield. We talk about distress in high yield as being a credit spread of around 1,000 basis points over government bonds. So something is distressed if it's trading a yield on those kind of measures in terms of spread over govies. Today, Chinese high yield has a spread of 1850, so 1,850 basis points over. So very much signs of extreme distress coming through to the generalised Chinese high yield market. So not just Evergrande, although obviously a handful of very, very high yielding names will skew the average. So that, you know, you need to look at the dispersion of that kind of standard deviation away from that within the basket. But nevertheless, something to continue to keep an eye on. And finally, it is a US holiday today, but we do have US inflation numbers coming out later this week. And that's going to be the thing that we're all looking at. Have good weeks. Bye.